President Ferdinand Marcos Jr. meets with officials of the Agriculture Department amid a looming food crisis. Malacanang says it will be just a matter of time before the president fills up the vacancies in his cabinet. The lawmaker seeking an extension of the terms of president and vice president says the country's current top two leaders will not benefit from his proposal. And new COVID cases in the Philippines top 1,000 for the fourth straight day. We'll tackle that with Dr. Guido David of the Octa Research Group. Hi, I'm Carmina Constantino. Dateline Philippines begins right now. Thanks for joining us. For those of you watching us on YouTube and on Facebook, nice to have you with us today. We begin with this story. The Marcos administration held its first palace briefing a couple of minutes ago. Our very own Pia Gutierrez now joins us with details. Pia, over to you.
Hi, Carmina. Yes, Press Secretary Attorney Trixie Cruz Angeles held her first briefing here in Malacanang. And then during the press conference, she clarified that President Ferdinand Marcos supports the creation of the Bulacan Airport City Special Economic Zone and Freeport. This despite Marcos's veto of House Bill 7575 last July 1, or the measure calling for its establishment. Malacanang noted the need for Congress to further sharpen the law and cure the defects of the measure, particularly the provision which exempts the Commission on Audit to look into the financial transactions on the economic zone. She said that there is a need for Congress also to clarify the procedures expropriating lands for agrarian reform beneficiaries, to clarify the meets and bounds of this economic zone, as well as a need for a justification from lawmakers that the zone will be nationally significant and will not narrow the country's tax base. She said that this veto to correct the defects is to prevent the constitutional challenges that are already expected later on, and that the establishment of the economic zone will be delayed further if the law is invalidated. Let's listen in to what Secretary Cruz Angeles said a while ago.
There is no indication of such certification, but the importance is evident in the explanation of the veto, that he merely wants these things to be sharpened. An approval of this law might result in a delay of its implementation because it might be challenged. So that's how important it is for him that a law is more finely crafted in relation to those matters that he has raised.
Also, Carmina, contrary to expectations, there were no announcements of new positions, particularly of the critical positions in government, such as the Secretary to the Department of Health. She said that the President is still strictly evaluating current candidates for the position, and that while he has not set any deadline for the appointments, she noted that these evaluations are already on the final stage and that she doesn't think that these appointments would be too long coming. And this is what the Secretary said about the matter.
Wala po sa binibigay sa amin na sinasabi nilang deadline. Ang sinasabi is masuri talaga ang pag-evaluate nila dito sa mga kandidato para sa mga posisyon. I understand that this is now going through the final evaluation stage. So, I don't think it will take too long. Ang sinasabi lang namin is dumadaan sa matinding pagsusuri. Wala tayong sinasabi nahihirapan or anything like that. But because these are important, precisely because these are very important positions, kailangan dumaan talaga sa butas ng karayom. We will rely on the President's wisdom to choose the best people for the job.
Meanwhile, the press secretary refused to answer questions regarding the birthday celebration of the former First Lady Imelda Marcos last Saturday, pictures and videos of which went viral on social media. Cruz Angeles said that she was not there, so she could not answer how the party went, but said that the concerns of the public on the supposed lavish celebrations making a comeback to Malacanang during the Marcos era are already noted. And she also insisted that the president will adhere to law as far as the social events in the palace are concerned. However, there is no policy yet, much like the previous Duterte administration. had before on how celebrations or social gatherings will be held or conducted in Malacañang. She also said that the president remains very upbeat and energetic during his first days in office. This morning, he attended the first flag raising ceremony in Malacañang, where he addressed employees of the office of the president. And Carmina, according to a transcript that we received of his short remarks during the flag raising ceremony, the president encouraged OP, or Office of the Presidential Staff, to go one or two steps beyond in performing their functions and duties to the people. The Malacañang still refuses to divulge, however, what the living arrangements of the first family will be because of the security reasons. This is despite an earlier interview of Ambassador Bela Valdez that the first family will be living in Bahay Pangarap. And overall, it was a very cordial and quick press briefing. There will be no regular press briefing yet, and she said that conference that will happen in Malacañang will depend on whether there will be big issues to address by the Office of the President. Carmina?
Yes, Pia, they did release a statement. The Office of the Press Secretary did release a statement over the weekend saying that they will not comment, that they will only comment on matters of public welfare and public interest. So, and she reiterated that again during the press conference this morning. But the question is, Pia, if their office is not going to comment on such things, who will?
Actually, in her press conference a while ago, she clarified that the question that she answered was related on the billboard of the former First Lady appearing in Malacañang. She said that the press statement was related to that, and that because the billboard was neither funded by the government or it wasn't constructed by the government, and that it had nothing to do with any government policy, then the press secretary could not comment on those matters. But she did, however, say that as far as these concerns are concerns go, the palace or the Marcos administration will adhere to law as far as how celebrations or social gatherings will be held in Malacañang. So as far as that question goes, Carmina, she said that maybe if the question given to her is worded in a way that it does appear to concern public matters, then they will answer those questions, Carmina.
All right, we're going to have to leave it at that. Pia Gutierrez there joining us on the line. Thanks, Pia. Take care. Keep safe. Back here in the newsroom, President Ferdinand Marcos Jr. buckles down to work as he begins his first full week in office. Joyce Balancho now joins us live to tell us more about the president's visit to the Agriculture Department, which he will be heading. Joyce, over to you.
Yes, Carmina, President Ferdinand Marcos Jr. has just left the office of the Department of Agriculture here in Quezon City. He had an executive committee meeting earlier here at the DA's Bureau of Soils and Water Management office. He also visited the office of the DA secretary in the main building and had a photo opportunity with the employees of the department. The meeting started and ended on time. He arrived minutes before 9 o'clock this morning and left 12 o'clock sharp as scheduled. His whole activity here was not open for media coverage, so reporters were barred or were not allowed to enter the DA premises. Now, for those who attended the meeting with the president, they were subjected to strict health protocols. All should be fully vaccinated and should have passed the antigen test done on site earlier. They also submitted a health declaration form, and all were required to wear face masks at all times. Now, to recall, President Marcos decided to take over the DA leadership instead of choosing a DA secretary so he could focus on addressing the important issues of the agriculture sector. In a press briefing in Malacañang minutes earlier, Palace spokesperson Attorney Trixie Cruz Angeles said that they have not yet received the details of the meeting here, that President Marcos himself might make the announcement of the details at the proper time. Next to his activity here at the DA office, President Marcos is also expected to grace the turnover and change of command ceremony of the Presidential Security Group. That will be later around 3 p.m. at the PSG Grandstand in Manila. Carmina.
Thanks a lot. Joyce Balancho there joining us live. Back here in the newsroom, for the sister of President Marcos, his veto on the Bulacan Ecozone Bill proves the independence of the branches of government under his administration. Senator Aimee Marcos sponsored the measure in the upper chamber. She says while her brother's move was nothing personal, she hopes it would not turn off potential local and foreign investors. For Senator Mig Zubiri, the project is not just a transportation hub, but a manufacturing hub that could bring in much-needed investments and jobs to central Luzon. Senator Joel Villanueva adds a project could improve the economy in his home province. The Philippine Chamber of Commerce and Industry, meanwhile, is not worried over the veto of the bill.
Kung may mga makikita ng gobyerno, may justification, baka pwede nila iayusin na ang position namin. Whatever is good for the country, ang concern namin, yung mga, lalo ng mga MSMEs. We were happy that meron siyang itong airport project dito sa Bulacan. Ma-encourage yung tourism dito sa North Luzon.
Albay Representative Joey Salceda will file a new version of the vetoed Bulacan Ecozone Bill. He says the revised version of the bill will take into consideration the criticisms of President Marcos. Concerns raised by environmental groups will also be addressed.
That the power of Ecozone Authority to grant incentives kailangan manggaling din po sa FIR. The rulemaking over ecological protection in the Bulacan Ecozone, I think kailangan ilagay pa rin sa DNR. Wala nakalagay doon na provision for audit with the Commission on Audit. So we will put all these conventional checks and balances over government authorities.
But the head of the Philippine Economic Zone Authority asserts it's better to have the Bulacan Ecozone registered with PESA than to have it declared a special economic zone via a law.
A legislated economic zone will mandate, no, the government to provide the seed capital, the maintenance and operating budget yearly allocated to maintain these ecozones, and to think that the Bulacan Airport is a private ecozone. So it is but appropriate to register it with PESA instead of having this legislated. So to spare the government of its responsibility to provide annual budget.
Well, as for environmental group Oceana Philippines, the Bulacan Airport City project could be struck down once and for all. See, Oceana hopes the new Marcos administration will have the political will to do so, for the sake of the environment and affected populations.
Hindi na talaga pwede. Hindi na natin kaya. You know, there's a flooding in Malabon, and Fisher Fox attribute it to the dredging, mga reclamation projects na nangyari sa Manila Bay. NEDA has a study na dapat no-go na yung airport project na yan eh. Why are we not listening to science? Kailangan bang matabunan muna lahat bago titigil? Ang dami ng damages inflicted upon the lives of our fisher folks and our natural ecosystems.
Justice Secretary Jesus Crispin Remulla attends his first flag-raising ceremony at the DOJ. There he vowed to uphold the rule of law. Mike Navallo has that story.
Newly installed Justice Secretary Jesus Crispin Boying Remulla vowed to go after syndicates in three key agencies under the Department of Justice. That's the Land Registration Authority, the Bureau of Immigration, and the Bureau of Corrections. In a speech shortly after his first flag-raising ceremony at the DOJ's main office in Padre Faura this morning, Remulla said he will prioritize reforms in these three agencies. He cited as example at the Land Registration Authority syndicates who are allegedly involved in land grabbing. He also snapped extortion, human trafficking, and protection syndicates at the Bureau of Immigration. And he also cited what he called unceasing syndicate activities at the Bureau of Corrections, which he said destroys the country. He, however, clarified that 95 to 99% of the people in these agencies may be beyond reproach, but are tainted by a few bad eggs. He pledged that under his watch, the DOJ will uphold the rule of law. In the same speech, Remulla said he did not apply for the Justice Secretary post, but could not refuse the invitation of President Bongbong Bongbong Marcos. He said he was offered the post on May 12, 3 days after the May 9, 2022 polls. He surmised that it may be because he can get things done. That's why President Bongbong Marcos chose him to be Justice Secretary. And he said that he is always open to accepting challenges. He said, and quote, "I have accepted all the challenges given me in my whole political life and probably my whole professional life," end quote. Remulla served as Assistant Secretary of Presidential Management Office during the term of former President Joseph Estrada. He also served and was reelected as Cavite representative. Remulla has yet to introduce his undersecretaries and assistant secretaries, but among those present at the flag-raising ceremony was lawyer Jesse Anves, who had earlier confirmed he will be part of Remulla's team, although he has yet to divulge in what capacity. Career officials, Prosecutor General Benedicto Malcontento and Chief State Counsel George Orta were also present. Remulla said that the people can expect that he will be totally committed to the cause of upholding justice in the country and the rule of law, and he said he's ready to give his life for this cause.
Well, new Transport Secretary Jaime Bautista focusing on helping alleviate the plight of the riding public. Jackie Manabat has more on Secretary Bautista's first flag racing ceremony as head of the DOTR. Jackie.
Carmina, the new Transport Secretary Jaime Bautista joined the flag racing ceremony and changing of guards at the Land Transportation Franchising and Regulatory Board Monday morning. He looked calm and all smiles as he greeted the agency's outgoing officials and present employees. He mentioned that he chose LTFRB over other sectors on his second day of work on a Monday because he will prioritize road transportation under the department. Issues have hounded LTFRB over the past week as the transport sector struggle with the impact of high prices of petroleum products. The new transport chief also noted the long lines he saw on his way to the LTFRB this morning. And Bautista said the long lines of commuters along EDSA do not go well with the mandate of President Bongbong Marcos wants him to accomplish. Now, he is meeting with LTFRB officials to discuss the programs to alleviate or ease long lines started by the previous administration and what they would enhance or would probably change. Secretary Jaime Bautista also urged LTFRB employees to collaborate with other agencies, where he said, quote, "Unity will be the key to being effective," end quote. And he also said that LTFRB would need to ask for additional budget for the other free ride service to sustain or extend the program. But as of now, Bautista said they would still have to study whether to maintain or reprogram the free ride project. Bautista, the former president and COO of Philippine Airlines, said he hopes to bring his distinct work ethic and style of management into the department by expelling their personnel to do their best to be professionals. He also pledged to transform the Philippine transport industry and elevate it to global standards, just like what he did in the airlines. Secretary Bautista also challenged the new LTFRB chairman, Attorney Shelloy Garafil, to focus on helping the riding public, saying that their cries are getting louder by the day. Attorney Shelloy Garafil is taking the helm of LTFRB. She was a journalist and a director of the House of Representatives Committee on Rules. She also worked as a prosecutor. Shelloy Garafil earlier indicated the orders of President Marcos to the regulatory body, which is to streamline the transaction process and agency, make sure to provide assistance to the public utility drivers, and prioritize the commuters' welfare. Road transportation is one of the hardest hit industries from the soaring fuel prices. And recently, the agency approved a fare hike for jeepneys nationwide and also ended over 140 routes of free ride service. President Bongbong Marcos also agreed to extend the EDSA Bus Carousel free ride service until December 2022. Back to you, Carmina.
Thanks a lot, Jackie Manabat. And back here in the newsroom, Social Welfare Secretary Erwin Tulfo also attending his first flag raising ceremony at the agency. And there he ordered the resumption of the preposition of goods in areas where typhoons usually hit. Tulfo said that program was stopped due to anomalies. The new Social Welfare Secretary also checked out the first day of the distribution of 500 pesos per month worth of aid to indigent families. The proposed extension of the terms of the Philippine President and a Vice President no longer applicable to President Marcos and Vice President Sara Duterte Carpio. That clarification coming from Pampanga Representative Aurelio Gonzalez, who refiled the bill this 19th Congress. Gonzalez wants a 5-year term with one re-election for the next president and VP, instead of the current one term of 6 years. He is also pushing to increase the current 3-year term of elected local officials and congressmen, excluding barangay leaders, to 5 years with a limit of only 2 consecutive terms.
Kung ma-approve to this 19th Congress, so mag-start po to sa 2025, di ba? So 2025, that's a midterm po ang ating Pangulo at ating Vice President. So palagay ko hindi na po sila pwedeng tumakbo dito. So from President, Vice President, Congressman, local executive from Governor down the line, yung mga last term po, hindi na sila pwedeng tumakbo. Like in my case, I am in my last term, I cannot run if this proposal will approve.
For political analyst Edmund Tayao, the Philippines should also look into political parties. He says the country needs to have real political parties if the goal is to allow administrations to continue their projects and policies.
We should consider looking at the whole political system. Anything and everything that has to do with politics and government is dependent on political personality. So that's what we need to cure. We have to have real political parties to begin with. Even if we are going to be changing elected leaders every now and then, if we have real political powers, the continuity that we're aspiring for would not be that difficult, because the political party will serve as the institutional memory.
In other news, a major drug bust in Quezon City yields 272 million pesos worth of shabu. A Chinese national was also arrested in that operation. For more on this story, we're joined by Philippine Drug Enforcement Agency Director General Wilkins Villanueva. Director General, magandang hapon po. Thank you for joining us today.
Yes, good afternoon, Ms. Carmina, and to all our viewers.
Malaking halaga po ito, 272 million pesos worth of shabu. Tell us more about the effort that went into the surveillance operations, the eventual apprehension. Kailan po nagsimula ang surveillance ninyo?
Yes, we have, before answering that, we have a mother Coplan in Pideya. We call it the Coplan Whisperer. Itong Coplan Whisperer na ito is the mother Coplan that take charge of all transnational drug trafficking organization. So, hindi lang ito isang operation, but it's composed of different operations. Since it started, nagkaroon tayo ng 35 anti-drug operation na nag-result ng apprehension ng 16 Chinese for the past several years and the 46 Filipinos. Magkaroon din tayo ng 2.4 tons of shabu na na-confiscated worth about 16 billion pesos. So itong pagkakahuli ng dalawang Chinese national kahapon is also part of the Coplan Whisperer, where on 10:30, itong a certain Kai Jai Shu ay nakapagbigay sa atin ng 40 kilos of shabu worth 272 million pesos. And then, succeeding operation naman sa Dasmariñas City, nagbigay naman ng 220 kilos of shabu na nagkakahalaga ng 1.496 billion pesos. So, marami pa tayong inaasahan dito na operation dahil marami pa rin tayong minamanmanan. Hmm. And these two operations are part of that what I said a while back, that part of the Coplan case operation plan whisperer.
Director General, through the years, alam na rin po natin ito that the Philippines has not only become a transshipment point of illegal drugs, manufacturing has also taken place, is also taking place here in the country. Ito pong nakumpiska ninyo na Shabu, dun po sa dalawang operations, were these imported or already manufactured here?
Actually, for so long, for about 3 years now, wala. Maliliit yung nakikita natin or nahuhuli natin na clandestine laboratories dito sa Pilipinas. Dahil simula nung 2016, pagpasok ng ating presidente, talagang nabuwag na natin halos, na-dismantle na natin halos ang mga clandestine na laboratories ng Pilipinas. So, with the kind of packaging na nakuha natin, may semblance kasi ito ng packaging originating in Golden Triangle, particularly sa Myanmar. So we believe that this methamphetamine ay galing sa overseas, galing sa Myanmar particularly.
Director General, do you think the smuggling of these drugs would have been possible without any help from within the government?
I believe for the past, since 2020, nung Director General ako, ay nakakuha tayo ng yung droga not necessarily na dediretso papuntang border natin, papuntang customs. But for two occasions, nakakuha tayo ng more than 580 kilos of shabu coming from international water, shipside operation ang tawag natin, kung saan yung mother vessel ng smugglers ay nandun sa international water, while a smaller vessel coming from a coast sa Pilipinas ay susunduin yung kukunin yung mga contraband or the smuggled meth. Ganon din yung nangyari 2 months ago ng bust ng NBI na kung saan 1.5 tons of shabu were interdicted somewhere in the coastline of Infanta, Quezon. So, alam natin at itong mga transnational drug trafficking organization is really doing their thing para talaga maipasok ang droga dito sa Pilipinas, because bottom line, marami pa rin ang consumer or users or addict dito sa ating bansa. That is why if we really want to put a stop dito sa problema natin sa illegal na droga, while the security forces are talagang pinapahinto itong pagpasok ng illegal na droga dito sa ating bansa, dapat yung counterparts naman natin from the local government units, other government agencies, and stakeholders should do their part through the intervention program dito sa ating mga persons who use drugs, or in the street word, itong mga addict natin sa Pilipinas.
Director General, what do you say to the observation that these operations, buy-bust operations in recent days, only point to the failure of the Duterte's drug war? Dahil hindi pa po, wala pa pong isang linggo nang nakakababa itong si Pangulong Duterte mula sa pagkapangulo, pagkatapos magkakaroon ito ng ganitong klaseng kalaki na drug buy-bust operations, which may only point to what some critics of the Duterte administration say, the failure really of his administration to curb illegal drugs or the use of illegal drugs here in the country. Director General?
It's not a failure. Actually, it is a success of our government sa itong pagkakahuli natin. It is a indicator of success by our government na our system works, because nakukuha natin. Remember, Ma'am Carmina, hindi lang naman ang Pilipinas ang may problema nito. Even the United States of America ay talagang binobombard ng pagpasok ng illegal na droga sa kanilang borders. And yet, they have the most sophisticated border control. Pangalawa, yung mga sea vessels nila ay talaga malaki yung mataas na ang level ng sophistication ng kanilang mga controls, particularly sa coastline. It's not a failure. It is a success as far as the our anti-drugs or war on drugs is concerned. But may kailangan pa tayong tapusin kasi hindi naman pwedeng over. It will not stop for the next 6 years. Kasi ang aim natin is for the users, all the users. Nung pumasok ang ating presidente, 4 million ang users na sinabi niya. Until may sumurrender ng 1.2 million users. And out of that, more than half million ang nabigyan natin na rehabilitation. But still, meron pang kalahating million na hindi pa nalalapatan na intervention program. At meron pang darating na would-be users na pwedeng maging users ng illegal na droga. So it's a continuing process until such time that not a single users will use drugs, then we can call it a success. But it is still work in progress. And I believe ang ating Pangulong Ferdinand Romualdez Marcos Jr. ay sinabi na dito naman siya papasok dun sa alternative, dito sa rehabilitation and reintegration part.
Yeah, let's zero in on that, Director General, because when you were breaking down how the number of users really lessened in the past years during the Duterte administration, nabanggit niyo po dyan yung mga nag-surrender, nagpa-rehab, hindi po niyo nabanggit yung mga napatay din po under this drug war. Pagdating po dito sa bagong termino, dito sa bagong pangulo natin, si Pangulong Marcos po, is this going to change? Do you think that we'll be seeing less and less of these suspected users getting killed in the name of the drug war?
Yes, for the information of everybody, yung sinasabing namatay, eh hindi naman ganun kalaki. Out of the total, 345 arrested persons ng dito sa 16 year ng ating presidente, 239 operations, 1,000 operation ang nakandak dito. Out of the 239 operations, 6,252 lang ang namatay sa anti-drug operation. That is what PDEA has in our database. Now, magpapatuloy itong patayan. Pag lalaban talaga sila, sinasabi ko nga doon sa report ko, annual report ko sa ating presidente, PDEA rin, we have the share of death. May namatayan din kami sa PDEA. So, hindi naman tayo papayag na sila lang ang pwedeng pumatay at kami, hindi kami pwedeng lumaban sa lahat ng lalaban. It is self-defense. And as far as PDEA is concerned, yung start ng patayan, it's yung pinakamataas nito is 2018. 19, 20, 21, 22, lesser. Bakit? Dahil yung mga sumurrender na, yung mga nag-undergo ng rehabilitation, ito na yon. While in fact before, wala pang intervention program . At pag kinandakan mo ng anti-drug operation, tapos basag na basag yung tao, talagang malalaban. Kasi you don't know what's on their mind because they are addicted to drugs.
So Director General, let me just cut you there, and I really apologize for this. I just want to go back to the recent drug operation. Sinabi niyo po, meron sa Quezon City over the weekend, nasundan po ito ng isa pang mas malaking buy-bust operation. Ito ho bang dalawang operation ito ay konektado po sa isa't isa?
Yes, magkasama silang dalawa. Actually, yung item nitong si Kai is galing dun sa Dasmariñas na kung saan yun yung bodega naman na doon natin nahuli si Lynn, Mr.
And how big is the network sa tingin niyo po?
Ganito eh. Yung droga natin right now is coming from the Golden Triangle. Namamanufacture ito sa Myanmar. Now, those transnational drug syndicates are not here in the Philippines. Nandun sila sa labas. They will only recruit people dito sa Pilipinas at pinipili nila yung mga Chinese nationals na matagal na dito sa Pilipinas.
Yun nga po yung isang tanong ko. Itong mga nahuli nyo po, gano'n na sila katagal dito sa Pilipinas?
Matagal na. Matagal na. Marunong na magtagalog itong si Kai. At the same time, marami pa silang... maraming grupo pa ito, iba't iba, pero iba't ibang connection. Bottom line is connection ito ng Golden Triangle Drug Syndicate. So, while we are catching these people on our border, dito sa ating bansa, scot-free pa rin yung member ng main syndicate na nagre-recruit sa atin. Bottom line, papasok pa rin at papasok ang droga for as long as merong users na gumagamit dito sa mga merchandise na ipinapapasok nila.
Finally, before we let you go, Director General, I know that you're there sitting as Director General of the PIDEA on a holdover capacity. But how do you think the drug war will look under the Marcos presidency?
I believe we have already the strategy in place under the Philippine Anti-Drug Strategy, which is the supply reduction, demand reduction, focusing more on the rehabilitation and reintegration program. That will complete itong main strategy ng PIDEA, which is the Barangay Drug Clearing Program. The thing is, tatlong stages ito. Medyo mataas na ang level natin sa foundation and the pivotal stage. However, there is really still a need to pursue yung sustainability stage wherein dun talaga siya papasok yung rehabilitation and reintegration. Dito mawawala, dito natin mabibigyan ng solusyon yung problema natin sa dami ng drug users nating bansa. So, whoever will replace me, PIDEA is really tailored fit to any to that kind of anti-drug strategy, and our people are professional and excellence driven na mga tao, at we believe that whoever will be appointed here our people will act solidly on behind our president.
PIDEA Director General Wilkins Villanueva, we appreciate you taking our call. Thanks for joining us this afternoon. Take care po and keep safe.
Thank you and good day.
And from there, we're going to take a break now. Up ahead, the Philippine Health Department eyes adding COVID-19 vaccines as part of its regular immunization program. We'll give you details of that story and more when Dateline Philippines returns. Stay with ANC. And we are back. You're still with Dateline Philippines here on ANC. Here's another look at our headlines this noon. President Ferdinand Marcos Jr. meets with officials of the Agriculture Department amid a looming food crisis. Malacanang says it will be just a matter of time before the president fills up the vacancies in his cabinet. The lawmakers seeking an extension of the terms of president and vice president says the country's current top two leaders will not benefit from his proposal. And new COVID cases in the Philippines top 1,000 for the fourth straight day. The Philippines logged over 1,000 new COVID-19 cases for the fourth straight day. The Health Department on Sunday reported 1,323 new infections. That's the highest daily tally in over 4 months. Over 600 of the cases were recorded in Metro Manila. The number of active cases now stands at 9,703, the highest since April 27. The government, however, has no plans to implement stricter measures yet, but it reminds the public to keep following minimum health protocols, especially the wearing of face masks. As cases continue to rise, the health department eyes adding COVID-19 vaccines as part of its regular immunization program. The DOH is currently reviewing its policies in a bid to increase penetration of vaccines and boosters more than 2 years into the pandemic and at the start of a new administration. Over 70 million Filipinos have received two doses of a COVID-19 vaccine, but only 2 out of 10 of that number have gotten their booster shots. Health experts have said the slow uptick in boosters may be a factor in the recent spike of infections. And for more on the steady uptick in new COVID cases in Metro Manila and several parts of the country, we're now joined by Dr. Guido David of the Octa Research Group. Dr. David, good afternoon to you. Thanks for joining us today. Welcome to the program.
Hi, yes. Good afternoon, Carmina.
All right. So the numbers climbing to its highest in months. What does that tell you, Dr. David?
Well, it tells us that cases are continuing to increase. We have been observing the uptick since early May, and it's been more than a month that we were seeing. In fact, you know, I think it's almost like 2 months when since we have been seeing this uptick in cases. The uptick has actually increased even further. Now we have a growth rate of about 50% weekly. So that means cases are 50% higher compared to the previous week. Although there are some indications that it may have already started to slow down, it doesn't mean it's peaked already. Mm. It does suggest that the possibility that cases could peak in 1 to 2 weeks if that trend holds. But this is not yet certain. What we do know is that we expect cases to increase even further. It could probably exceed 2,000 or maybe even reach 3,000 cases per day in the whole country.
Dr. David, can the government stand aside and observe the numbers go up? Can the government afford to do that at this point? Because we have enough buffer, healthcare utilization remains low, although we're having problems with the booster shots. But is it still manageable that government just won't do anything at this point?
Well, Carmina, as we all know, managing the pandemic is really a tough balancing act. And in the past, the economy has had to take a backseat to public health. And this happened last year during the two waves of infections because we didn't have vaccines yet at that time. And, August last year, during the Delta wave, we reached about 25,000 cases per day. I mean, it was actually higher than that. But our hospitals were overwhelmed. And that is the primary reason that we actually had to go to lockdowns, because the doctors, the frontliners, the hospitals were being overwhelmed. And there were a lot of people, you know, dying outside hospitals or could not get the hospital care that they needed. Looking at what happened in January, we didn't have to lock down because we already had vaccinations. Now, that being said, of course, there's some aspect of waning immunity that we have to consider. But so far, hospital utilization has remained low. It's still around 23% in Metro Manila. It increased very slightly. We don't project that hospitals will be filled up. And because it's a balancing act, I think this time the public health will have to take a backseat to the economy, meaning that, you know, our priority is getting the economy back on track, especially with all the challenges that lie ahead with inflation, mm-hmm. rising prices and everything. The jobs that people have are very important right now. Public health is not, we're not minimizing the threat of the virus. It's still there. But we hope and we think that it could probably be managed. But we have to remind the public to follow the minimum public health standards, wear face masks, and if possible, they could get boosters. So personal responsibility this time is key here because the way we understand it, the economy can't really afford to have another lockdown.
Mm. And part of that balancing act, Dr. David, is that we contain the numbers in the areas where the healthcare system is more sophisticated compared to other areas. But because of the increased mobility that people now have, what is the story in the provinces? Do you also see that because of the increased mobility that the numbers will spread there, that we'll also see an uptick in cases in the provinces where the healthcare system may not be as sophisticated? Dr. David.
Those are good points, Carmina. And right now we're seeing the increase in cases mainly in NCR and parts of Calabarzon, parts of central Luzon are starting to see an uptick. We're also seeing it in western Visayas and in Benguet region. There's also some upticks now being observed in regions 1 and 3. In Mindanao, we're not yet seeing a significant uptick in cases. But you're correct. These cases will, the infection will likely be spreading to the provinces sometime in the near future. I mean, it may have already started spreading in some provinces, but the level is still very low right now. And the factors, I mean, these could affect the hospital system differently in provinces. So that's why we're monitoring those as well, to track if there are hospitals that could be in danger of being overwhelmed in the provinces. Mm.
And as we speak, Dr. David, I mean, we're talking about numbers, we're talking about appropriate action, we're talking about still adhering to health protocols. We talk about these things without a health secretary still in place. How important is it that a health secretary is appointed already by this newly installed government?
Well, it's important, but I think they're taking their time, because I think my impression is that there are several very good candidates. There are usually very good candidates for health secretary, and they're probably choosing between among them the best candidate. We hope that the new health secretary could be appointed very soon, you know, within the next 1 to 2 weeks, especially since cases are rising right now. And we need, someone, a capable health secretary at the helm to guide us. And, we have in the past recommended, or at least suggested, that the health secretary be someone who's, champion for the Filipino people, and who will really fight for public health, and also be a good spokesperson and a good administrator. So we hope and we're optimistic that the new health secretary will have those characteristics, and we're hoping to find to see who the next one will be over the coming weeks.
And as we wait for that name, what's that one thing that this new health secretary must do to make the pandemic response better to benefit all Filipinos?
Well, there are several that they should do. Of course, aside from the balancing act that we talked about, scale up healthcare systems, implement a build for hospitals, address the concerns of the frontliners, the nurses in particular, who are asking for a higher pay, because right now we're having our system of human resource being drained because people are migrating overseas. And we still have to continue the monitoring, genome sequencing, and we have to look into the other diseases as well. And I think these are some of the things. And of course, the health secretary should be science driven. Of course, health secretary will most likely be a doctor, not necessarily so, but their decisions should be based on data, and that's why it's important to have the proper data around. And of course, like I said, a good spokesperson and someone who can communicate and gain the trust of the Filipino people. So overall, they have to give the right recommendations as to what our direction should be. And if we are going to exit the pandemic, that's already been in discussion sometime within the next few months or so. The health secretary should lay out a good exit strategy for the pandemic.
We're going to have to leave it at that. Dr. Guido David, fellow of the Octa Research Group, thank you so much for joining us today. Really appreciate it. Take care and keep safe.
Thank you.
More news now. Tragedy in Copenhagen. Three people are confirmed dead in the Danish capital Sunday after a gunman opened fire at a shopping mall. Several others are wounded, three of them in critical condition. Police have arrested a 22-year-old man, although it was too early to establish a motive. Police said they cannot yet rule out an act of terrorism. Witnesses quoted by Danish media said the suspect had tried to trick people to approach him by saying his weapon was fake. Security has been tightened around the mall and across Copenhagen. In business, some relief for motorists this week as prices of some local petroleum products are set for a rollback. Diesel prices will go down by 3 pesos per liter tomorrow, while a liter of kerosene will now be 3 pesos and 40 centavos cheaper. But the price of gasoline will see no movement. Global crude prices fell last week after OPEC and its allies stuck to a previously decided output boost for August. Russia's invasion of Ukraine has exacerbated concerns about oil supplies, sending prices to record highs this year. In sports, Gilas Pilipinas gets back on track in the FIBA World Cup Asian qualifiers. The Philippine national basketball team walloped India 79-63. Gilas had just come from a 46-point beating at the hands of New Zealand. Leading the way against India was Dwight Ramos, who finished with 21 points, 5 boards and 4 steals. Gilas ended the first round with a 2-2 record, good enough to advance to the next phase. Meanwhile, Filipino center Kai Soto will not play in the FIBA Asia Cup in Indonesia. That's according to Gilas Pilipinas program director and head coach Chot Reyes. He says Soto has decided to do other things and forgo the FIBA Asia Cup. For more on this story, head on over to news.abs-cbn.com. And that'll do it for today. Thanks for joining us. I'm Carmina Constantino. If you want to revisit today's episode, you can play back this newscast on ANC's YouTube channel and on ANC 24/7 on Facebook. Keep safe. Keep it here on ANC.